Hey, movie fans, Dimitri here, Popcorn Talk Network's Anatomy of a Movie, where today we try to figure out if remaking a French film has any upside. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Anatomy of a Movie.
Well, happy New Year, movie fans. Yes, Anatomy of a Movie has been on hiatus. But we are back, and that's the upside. So, being that we are back, it's our first Anatomy of a Movie of 2019. Allow me to give great introduction to Marissa Serafini. Hey!
Hello, everyone. Hello, Dimitri.
How are you? Happy New Year.
Happy post-holidays. Happy
post-holidays.
New Year.
Yeah, how are you? Haven't seen you since well before the holidays.
We haven't seen each other in a while, actually.
It's been a lot. Lucky you. Yeah, it's been a great show. And we have also doing our ones and zeros, Juliet in the booth. Hello. Happy New Year to you.
Hi, guys. I've missed you all. I'm so excited to be back with you.
Yeah, she missed us like the flu. But it's really great to have you back here. Back with us as well, and plus you're going to Juliet has a other than doing the fine engineering on the show, she is the one of our panel today that's actually seen the original film. I defer to you to say what it is, the French film.
Come on, Dimitri. No.
Go ahead. Here we go. Untouchable.
Bravo. Exactly.
The Untouchables. Yes. So she's actually seen the French film. This is sort of kind of a weird thing. So it's based on a true story, mm-hmm. right? So we see so many movies that are based on true stories, right? But this is a based on a true story remake of a French film.
Yeah. True story.
That's a true story. So, and the movie itself is called The Upside, which has a really kind of odd pairing, you would think, from the outset.
Unlikely
pairing of Kevin Hart with Bryan Cranston, and then you throw Nicole Kidman into this mix as well. So, as we always begin the show, we start off with our opinions, and I defer to you, Ms. Marissa, ladies first, as always.
All right, so I'll be honest, that for any of our longtime listeners and fans, I'm not the biggest fan of Kevin Hart. I've had my moments where I've just gone off on Kevin Hart. So I had my apprehensions of going into this film knowing that he was in it. And I was actually thoroughly surprised. He gave a good performance. He had his comedic jokes in between that it was I felt more Kevin Hart rather than the character. But overall, a very tolerable performance. One of the better performances I've actually seen from him. Bryan Cranston and Nicole Kidman, they're just amazing as always. So I knew they weren't going to be an issue. But overall, it was a very touching story, very endearing. I like whenever you have an unlikely pairing, something you have to break through those boundaries and those barriers and then slowly become friends and build that relationship.
Sure.
So those are always fun stories to follow because right. You get attached to these people and you start caring about them, especially when they're together, when they're apart. And it had those same beats of an unlikely duo friendship. I think the last one that we just covered was Green Book, was very, very unlikely pairing together. But eventually they had to break through those boundaries and become friends. And so it's not the first time you've seen it.
Right.
But I think it definitely covers all the beats in that type of storyline mm-hmm. that you would expect it.
Yeah.
Not very original, per se, but enjoyable.
Sure. You know, it's interesting that you said, we've seen this. And I am happy that you mentioned Green Book, because I was thinking Green Book about while watching this. And this movie had sort of kind of that 80s feel. If this movie were done in the 80s, it would have been Jack Lemmon and Eddie Murphy, right? Mm-hmm. But the movie still, it had this generic feel to it. And what I found, I really did actually appreciate the pairing of Bryan Cranston and Kevin Hart. And I agree with you. I, too, am not the biggest Kevin Hart fan, right? But I agree with you in that I think this is probably his finest performance going in. He was able to rein it in. He was able to deliver drama and comedy fairly well. Mm-hmm. He was able to, go with Bryan Cranston. I thought that pairing really worked. And when you throw Nicole Kidman into the cast, she rounded out the cast quite nicely. And I wish the movie itself, like, was able to live up to the actors and give them more respect, because I really did enjoy watching them. But I found that this movie was very rote and kind of just generic. It was a movie.
By no means
did I dislike it. I didn't have a miserable time while I was in the theater watching it. But at the end of the day, it was just a movie that was up on screen and I walked out and that was it. So, and then when you compare it to Green Book, which has everything going for it, in my opinion, that you had fantastic casting, you had two solid performances, and you had this a real life odd couple taking this journey, and that movie hits all its beats. Some of its criticism for Green Book is similar to this movie, that, well, it's a little bit predictable, we've seen this before. But right. I couldn't help but think of how much better Green Book was from a crowd-pleasing movie as well. So in the third act, I think in The Upside, really was sort of kind of just went, it was
kind of tapered
mess.
Off.
Yeah.
Yeah, it tapered off. It lost momentum.
It did.
A good solid 20 minutes of lost momentum.
Yeah, it was it was kind of lazy writing. To how we got to there and how characters and, you know, so we'll get into that a little bit.
One of the things is like easily fade to black. All right. When we open up on our next scene, we as the audience have to figure out how much time has passed.
That's
the whole thing.
And our whole judgment of that was like, Bryan Cranston's beard.
Right. And you're like, that's the only visual indication of how much time has passed. I don't, because I'm not a man. I don't know how much hair grows up. In a beard form, how much time passes for that?
But it juxtaposed a person opening up an entire business.
Yeah.
Like, which doesn't happen overnight.
And moving. And
right.
All that.
Yeah, yeah. There was a lot that was left to be desired in tightening up the end. So, now, Juliet, you have seen the original. I would like a take, since we just, you know, gave our opinions on this remake, this American remake. I want your take. If I recall our conversation, you said you loved it. So tell us about the original.
Oh, I love the original, and so much so that I haven't seen this remake. I want to, because I am hearing good things. It's tough, though, when you really love a movie and you see someone just kind of take it over. You have to trust the filmmakers. But from the trailer, and honestly from your conversation, I'm just a little nervous that they made it very Hollywood and this very Hollywood story. You're talking about him opening up a business. That doesn't even happen in the movie. The original movie is really about this relationship and how these two men are helping each other. One's really struggling because of his his state and being living in the ghetto. And then he gets to be living in this super, super fancy home. And he sees someone who has handicaps, but he's the first person who actually sees him. And it's just a really human story.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, and it kind of ends on a note where it is a happy note, but it's not, there's no opening up a business and like everything's great, very Hollywood happy movie. You know what I mean? It seems a little bit more realistic.
Okay.
And I do have to say the original, so this was based on a book from a true story.
Yes.
Even in the French version of the movie, they changed up a few things to make it, again, in a long feature film, which has to happen. Mainly the main character in real life is not an African, French African. He is, I think, Algerian or Moroccan. So that's already that. But here in the American version, they decided to stick with that. And that's why they hired Kevin Hart. So, you know, to each their own, adapted, you know, is always a hard thing. And Marissa, I'm sure you can speak more on that because she has a show on Popcorn Talk about just adapting movies and books and things of that nature.
And I have to ask you, because this film, for the American version, there were a lot of comedic moments in between. Was Intouchable more just like straight drama?
No, I think that's one of the reasons people really love this movie. It's a movie that really does make you laugh and smile. And no, there are a lot of very funny moments. And mainly those funny moments were driven by the main character who just had no filter and was just, you know, everything that he saw kind of just said it out loud. And it was always very funny. And it was also funny to just kind of criticize French society and how there's very rich people and very, you know, poor people. And that's something that we see kind of everywhere. And that was that driven a lot of the humor.
You know what? I'm really glad that you mentioned that too, because I'd seen this movie a few weeks ago. So you bringing up how it tried to put French society through a looking glass, this is one of the aspects of The Upside that I actually thought sort of kind of failed. They were bringing characters in, like the neighbor, who they were setting up as a villain. Kind of, right? But nothing really happened with that. And you thought that they were going to go play this, like, you know, having this African-American man come into this posh, I mean, exclusive apartment complex in Manhattan. And you thought that there was going to be some more play there, but nothing really developed. I mean, there was a bit of a funny punchline about selling art to that neighbor, but nothing really happened there, even though they set it up for him to be
right.
Like,
it's more so like the neighbor, as big of a douchebag he was, right. He still succumbed to like Philip and his ability and like still gave in, still gave money. So you're like, you're still a fool.
Yeah.
And you're a douche.
Yeah. And so I had hoped that there was maybe, you know, because there were perfect opportunities in The Upside in order to do that and to showcase that high class, low class, middle class kind of schism. And I felt it could have been a smarter script that way. But we never really, you don't really get it too much, Juliet, in this American version. However, if you were to see the American version, I don't think you'd walk out being disgusted.
No.
It's a good way to kill an hour and a half to 2 hours. You'll laugh.
It's a 2 hour
that's
movie.
Good. Yeah. That's good to hear. And just again, I haven't seen it, but hearing what you're saying about the neighbor, that's a really funny point in the French version. But it only comes back, I believe, twice. We only meet the neighbor once because he has his car parked outside the entrance,
and
they just are trying to get the car out. And he was like, "Why is he parked here?" He goes, "Oh, he does that sometimes." And the main character goes out, and he doesn't beat him up, but he roughs him up. He's like, "What does the sign say?" And he holds him super close to the sign. He goes, "No parking, so don't park here again." And it's a really funny exchange. And that's kind of it. So it's funny that they kind of hold on to these characters and maybe develop them a little bit more.
Sure.
And maybe you saying that falls flat.
Sure.
I think they're trying to, sometimes it's hard to translate a joke and, you know, translate a culture and how things are funny, in, you know, in one culture and not in the other. So maybe they stuck a little bit too much to that storyline.
Right. And I think with the neighbor, like, as much as a D-bag he was, he did play a part because Dell ultimately got the $50,000. You know,
true, so he was duped into buying, you know, Dell art.
Yeah, and it also kind of shows just the kind of businessman that Philip is. He's so good at selling literally a piece of junk for $50,000. That's why he's so rich, because he can talk people's ears off and convince them to sell something or buy something.
Yeah.
And I think that really just shows, like, the talent of Philip just as a businessman.
Right.
And you understand why he was so successful
financially. You understand. Yeah, you do understand through Philip, through his character, through Nicole Kidman, you understand how he became who he is, how he became so rich in making great business decisions. He kind of reminded me of the gentleman that's on, the MSNBC show, the guy that goes in and fixes businesses. It's a television series. So the premise of the series is this guy will go in and fix failing businesses. And Philip reminded me of that, because he was very, very keen to that in coming up with the idea. And I liked, that was part of the relationship that I liked between Dell and Philip, was like, you got to come up with an idea. Give me some ideas and I'll help you, like, develop them.
That are actually like fruitful.
Yes.
And successful right. businesses that can flourish.
Yes. So, and you can tell that he had a modicum of success being the suite that they had mm-hmm. in Manhattan. That was a beautiful apartment. And we can get into the production design on that because it wasn't an apartment, but it was a set. But it was pretty cool. It's
a gorgeous set. It's pretty gorgeous. I would want to live on that set because set is better than like anybody's regular house.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but let's talk a little bit about Bryan Cranston. Let's talk about... Playing the part. This is something that Cranston had really never done, and he took it as a challenge, and it was a hard challenge for him playing a quadriplegic. Mm-hmm. And it was said that he's an actor that is physical as well as, you know, his vocal. And when you take away a weapon, which is the physical aspect, he can't move. He said he had to learn like how to really communicate better and how to have the rapport with Del, played by Kevin Hart.
He's very well spoken.
Oh, yes.
Individual.
He's very unique and like you can pick
educated.
His voice. Yeah.
Likes yeah. the opera.
Sure. Know, and Cranston.
Highbrow.
Himself has, if you had your eyes closed, you can tell who's speaking,
mm-hmm.
you know. So he has a very unique delivery. I thought he did a really good job. I really did. I got every bit of emotion. I liked the fact as to his motivation for picking Del. More or less to pick off right. Nicole, you know, piss off Nicole Kidman.
Because, you know, we as the audience, we're having the same question. You see all these other
right.
candidates who are so clearly more qualified, but you wonder why he picked Kevin, and then, or Kevin, like actual Del. And I think they actually really hit it really quickly, but we understand that he is the guy who wouldn't take the necessary charges, you know, extra steps if something emergency did happen.
Yeah, and Chris.
And you know, like, that's actually terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
If you think about it, you're like, I'm going to pick you because you're more likely to not do what you should be doing.
Right. And it also, well, it in a sense, too, it puts the audience in a frame, in a similar frame of mind. Like, we understand where that character is coming from, mm-hmm. as far as depression goes, as far as his thoughts on future life, you know, for that matter.
He wasn't really thinking about his future.
No. And
he was okay if he died within an hour.
And the relation, well, you know, the no resuscitation.
Yeah, DNR.
The relationships that he may have had even with his previous caretaker. Like, you just wonder, what was it? Was that person just there to take care of him? There was mm-hmm. no social, there was no social interaction. It didn't seem the only person that he had anything that he was close to was Nicole Kidman, and both those characters sort of shrugged off any kind of relationship. Where we, as the audience, right,
we're
in doubt,
there's something there. There's something yeah. like even if they're so in denial, we're like, we wouldn't mind it if you two got together.
No.
Because it's believable. It's actually
extremely.
Very believable.
I found
there's a mutual
that too.
Respect there. There's a mutual, like, good relationship and loyalty that she definitely had towards him even before he was a quadriplegic. So it's like you can tell that they already had a very strong friendship relationship before all this happened.
And we just say a maturity.
Yeah.
As well between the two characters, and they each knew each other. So, you know, so Cranston... was really interesting for part of his research. He actually sat and talked to now you can help me out with this, Felipe Pozzo di Borgo or Borgo,
the almost, you got it. Oh. Very close.
The actual person in which the story is based.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about the major emotional impact on Cranston, is he focused on his emotional, on de Borgo's emotional trials, which is very important.
Depths of depression.
Poof. Yeah. Which you can understand, right?
Yeah, and also they, I don't know if they talked about this, the phantom pain and just waking up in the middle of the night and just sweats and just not being able to move your body and how much that creates anxiety because you go in deep sleep and you forget and then you're just not in control. And that was a very crucial part of the movie.
As a matter of fact, they do touch upon that in this movie. Mm-hmm. But Cranston being Cranston went further and he actually visited for a former football player, Eric LeGrand, who was paralyzed in 2010 while playing football at Rutgers. And they spoke at length about his experiences, and he observed him during the physical therapy aspect of it all. And that really helped Cranston be better accustomed to being in that chair and or being picked up, you know. Mm-hmm. There are many of those scenes, too, that we take for granted. When picking him up and putting somebody in the chair, it's like strap,
because always buckle him right, in.
yeah so there are things like that you get, oh yeah, of course that would be important. don't want to fall out of the chair,
just to sit in a chair.
Yeah. So what did you think about Cranston's performance in this movie?
I thought he was great. I mean, the only really experience that I've had with Bryan Cranston watching him in his work is just really in the films. I haven't watched him. Sorry, I did not watch Breaking Bad. I was not one of those people. Or Malcolm in the Middle. So I really only have seen him in films. And I think he's a very solid actor. And I've seen other actors who aren't paralyzed but had to play characters that are. And they always say it is a physical struggle. And Bryan Cranston said his approach was that at first he had a lot of anxiety because he got too tense because he was consciously like trying to not stop his body.
Right.
And then he realized like the better approach was to actually be more zen-like.
Right.
So he went the opposite approach and then realized he can only use his head. And that it relaxed his body to the point where he wasn't moving. And that type of relaxation. And it was very believable.
I'm glad you mentioned the relaxed because his performance seemed relaxed, you know, using his facial features, doing what he did. It didn't seem, well, number one, it seemed as if he were playing a man that had been in that wheelchair for some time, right? So when it came time for drinking and using the sippy, like a sippy straw, you're right, it felt natural. And he didn't play the role with any subject of disrespect to it. He really, I thought he did a really good job.
Yeah, he definitely acted through the face and like facial features, especially, you know, the scene where Del's like throwing everything and that's like physical. Mm-hmm. Del's doing the physical reactions of what Philip would be doing if he could move.
Right.
And we saw that. We saw the motions. Like just the wave of in and out emotions of anger to frustration to even like laughing at the end of that. We saw those emotional rides.
Right.
Within just a couple minutes.
Yeah.
Just in the face. And so like that's a really strong attribute to have as an actor. If you can act with just your head, what would you do? And we saw that.
And we also, to throw these characters into these roles, you know, Bryan and Kevin went to like the Kessler Institute for Rehabilitation in New Jersey, the Maggie Rehabilitation Hospital in Philadelphia to get a feel. I mean, if these two, and this is the other thing that I, you know, that the movie succeeds in is building the relationship, right? Mm-hmm. You could have gone, like, this is the type of movie that could have gone a little bit farther. Like, they could have made the whole rehabilitation Kevin Hart cater to more Kevin Hart type comedy, which you brought up earlier, could have been more slapstick, but they really didn't. Yes, the catheter joke goes on. Okay.
Right. That was probably, I was like, okay, we get it.
Right.
A little too long.
But the getting him into a chair or getting him into bed, it's funny because it's out of Del's wheelhouse, but Del did take it seriously. It wasn't like, you know, you drop him and he's like, oh, whoopsie. It was done really well. And I felt that their research probably helped build that bond, You know, because if you're working together,
there's a physical bond too.
Yeah, there has to be.
Physically lifting him up.
Yeah.
Know? He physically has to support
and
him,
it's,
let alone emotionally.
No pun intended, it's dead weight.
Yeah.
And he had to do that. And Kevin Hart's not a big guy.
No. I've actually stood, physically have stood next to Kevin Hart, and he's shorter than I am. And I'm a short person.
Like, Kevin, come
so
on.
So when Kevin Hart,
I mean, no
is shorter than
you.
Me.
Yeah,
no. Seriously, he's short. And I'm taller than him, so yeah. True story.
So, and for Kevin Hart taking this role, well, number one, he really wanted it because it would expand his acting chops, and he saw that in the script, and I do think it was a good decision for him to take. It isn't. Well, it's not like any other performance that we've seen Kevin Hart in. It's, you know, he just recently came out with in Night School, which is more of his comedic kind of comedy movie. In this movie, he's, you know, he has to play in the dramatic. And I guess going into it, too, you just sort of kind of wonder, can he pull it off? And I think for this movie, he did.
Yeah. And see, and that's the thing, like, I feel Kevin Hart's usual performances is over the top.
Sure.
It's over the top, and I think it's a conversation to kind of, like, have a bigger personality than his physical self.
Right.
Like, and I definitely get that. And so what I actually enjoyed about his performance is, like, it was dialed back.
Yeah.
To a point where it was tolerable. You, like, no one's going to get annoyed by you in the first 10 minutes.
Right.
Because his act is over in 10 minutes. And you're like, okay, laugh here, laugh there, got it, done, move on. But and I think that's the thing. Like, when he dialed it back, that makes it more enjoyable.
Yeah, I found him, like I said, I think it's probably the finest performance in his career as of now. Like I said, I wish the script was a little bit better, but I thought he was really good. And the crazy thing about this movie is, so you, we were talking about Bryan Cranston, right? And then you have Nicole Kidman, who, like, Nicole Kidman has had this, she seems to be in almost every movie now.
But she was in every movie 10 years ago as well.
Yeah.
Like, Nicole Kidman is literally one of the top actresses to this day.
To the day, right. And so, Nicole Kidman, Bryan Cranston, and then you're throwing in Kevin Hart. It's like, how's this trio going to work? They worked.
Yeah, and that was also what I was thinking. I was like, I think Kevin's performance was elevated because he was surrounded by better actors. You know, it's kind of like when you have to play tennis with pros, or anybody, whatever, you know, metaphor you want to use. When you're thrown in with people who are better at acting than you are, you have to kind of, like, rise to that,
right,
to that level. And I think that's what Bryan Cranston won so many Emmys. Nicole Kidman has won Emmys and Academy Awards. So, like, when you're in a pool of more talented or better talented,
right,
actors, like, you kind of have to rise to that channel, or you're just going to look like you.
Absolutely.
Look terrible.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what helped when, because Kevin was surrounded by better actors.
Sure. Sure. And I think, you know, when you look at these three people and you're throwing them together, you said, that's unlikely. But it works. And I think not one of them, like, not a, like your top tier performers here, Nicole Kidman, Bryan Cranston, not one of them phoned in this performance. At all.
No.
You know, they really, you can tell that they took a liking to the material that they were playing. And, you know, when they were trying to cast Yvonne here, they were looking for an actress who wouldn't overplay the role to allow, like, some of that mystery, even though as an audience, we kind of, like, wanted them to be together.
Right.
Because they seem good for each other. And
Jessica Chastain and Michelle Williams, both amazing actresses.
Absolutely.
In and of their own selves. I think they were actually originally, like, considered for the role. And I would have been fine with them, too.
I would have, too. And think about this, too. That role is, like, the third. Like, that's a supporting role. I mean, you could say she's best actress,
but it's not. But she had great moments that brought, that still brought Philip back to,
it,
like, drama, like, grounded every situation. It would get, like, maybe too funny or, like, too comedic, especially with the catheter scene. And then you see Yvonne, you know, it's like she always brought everything back down to earth.
Yeah.
In a good way.
And I just want to talk about, like, you know, when you have that caliber of an actress, right? And you're going to this person, they're going, well, I'm the lead. Well, yeah, you are the actress, but your role is really a support to these two guys. And sometimes ego can get in the way of that, but not here. Not here at all.
Not with Nicole.
And she played really well with the boys. One of my favorite scenes, I think, with Nicole Kidman was at the party when Dell convinced her, get up and dance, you know? I thought, and that was like an ice-breaking moment for those two characters, too, I really believe. But it was it was a nice scene.
It definitely was a nice scene, a nice moment for her character, because throughout the entire film, she's the serious one. And, right. Someone has to be, and I totally get it. And she's not serious in a bad way. It's just, she has to be the serious one and, bring, gravity to the situation.
Yeah.
And, she's always the reminder, you can't do this. You can't do that. In a good way. So she's naturally tense.
Agreed.
And you knew that you had to, again, even with her, you had to kind of, shed those layers.
Right.
Because underneath, she's a fairly good person who is just looking out for the well-being of Philip.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So I want to talk a little bit. I want to go into the production of this movie because it has somewhat of a tale.
Yes.
Being number one, this movie was made about 2 years ago. And
it's been completed for a while.
Yeah. And, which has to be hard if you're doing any publicity because depending on how many movies you've done since then. And your other movies have come out before this movie. But unfortunately, this movie got wrapped up in being part of the Weinstein company.
Harvey Weinstein scandal.
You know, the scandal, the sell-off, what's going to happen. So it took...
Got stuck in the middle.
Got stuck, yeah. It definitely got stuck in a crack. Mm-hmm. What are they going to do? And it could have almost not seen the light of a silver screen, maybe just sold off some for a streaming service or something. But it literally took about 2 years, and STX picked it up. It was a distribution deal.
Yeah.
Which is ironic for STX, being that they are a motion picture studio who does productions. And yet it was a distribution deal that gives them their first number one movie in all of their, I think, their 2-3 year history.
Yeah.
Right now. But to go through all that, it makes me wonder.
And it had a rebranding of Weinstein Lantern Entertainment.
Sure.
So there was a whole rebranding of another company that helped produce this film as well.
Oh, yeah. The Weinstein name is not there at all that I can recall.
Well, actually, I saw it at the beginning credits. It said Lantern Entertainment, but underneath the little text, it said a Weinstein company. Right. I'm like, oh, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is interesting. You know, I mean, listen, not that I didn't love this movie, but I'm glad people felt, hey, you know what? People should at least see their performances here.
Right.
They're good enough. And, you know,
it's the story.
Its release date, I think, is a really solid release date. So we were just watching a little bit of Kevin Hart and Nicole Kidman. looks like behind the scenes. You could tell that this cast,
they enjoyed being with each other. And Bryan Cranston even said about Nicole Kidman in between takes and stuff, you would expect, because she's such a high caliber actress, that she would stay in her roles. And was like, no, she was she was joking around. She was, having funny moments with the cast, and she was sweet and all these moments where she was just a really nice person offset. I was like, yes.
Yeah.
That's Nicole Kidman.
Yeah. It did look like they bonded together really well.
Yeah.
So that you felt that after they said cut, there was still a good relationship there, that they all respected one another.
Yeah.
You know,
they had
so
fun.
Which is really, really interesting. So, yeah, it took about 2 years for this movie to make it to the American big screen. Which I found very fascinating. And that's what happens when there's scandal in Hollywood. Unfortunately,
yes.
some product. It makes me wonder, what other product are we not getting? Could there be another gem?
I feel there's probably at least 5 to 10 more Weinstein films probably shelved right now.
Yeah, that they had to try to sell off. So, What is there anything that you'd like to add regarding production-wise before we go into a little production design-wise?
Yeah, I was going to just go with the production design.
Sure.
But the last thing about the production was just this, because you said it's been done for a while now. It actually had its world premiere at the Toronto International Film Festival, so TIFF, back in September 2017. So a year and a half has already passed.
Yep.
And, like, even before that, it was fully completed before I even did the festivals.
Sure. Yeah.
So that's a lot of time in film.
It is.
A lot of
time. It's a lot of time on a shelf.
Right.
You know?
And I think even at that time, like, Nicole Kidman wasn't as big in television yet.
True.
Because Big Little Lies, like, just came out a couple months after that.
Yep.
And then she got the recognition for the television screen as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, she was already an Academy Award winner, you know, through and through. But now she's getting, like, the Emmy Awards for Big Little Lies.
Yeah.
I mean, she can do everything, so.
Yeah, she's definitely having a wonderful renaissance of a career by being television. Film, she was in Aquaman, which is, like, one of the highest grossing movies, especially for DC, all over the world.
Yeah, she's actually
in The Upside. She's in Destroyer.
She just broke a record, actually, or like she just set another record, or equal record, really, where she's the only actress to be in the same film that's number one and two in America. So for national, with Aquaman and The Upside.
And then The Upside.
And the only other actress to do that is Jessica Chastain. Yeah, for Mama and Zero Dark Thirty.
Oh, wow. Mama.
Yeah.
Mama and, Lucian. Yeah.
But also Jessica Chastain was in consideration for this role. So.
I actually am. I love Jessica Chastain,
love
too.
But
I can't see, after watching this, I can't see any other actor playing Nicole Kidman, playing Yvonne.
I think she did it just...
Yeah, I can't. Yeah. I really, yeah.
Believable.
So
earlier we were mentioning Weinstein movies that are being shelved currently.
Yes.
There's quite a few. There's one, The Current War, which is a historical drama starring Benedict Cumberbatch.
Cumberbatch, yep.
Who plays Thomas Edison. And it was previously
as
an Oscar contender. Because it was at the Toronto International Film Festival. That's being shelved for now. Mary Magdalene is a religious drama that's being shelved for now as well. And then The Upside, but that obviously just premiered. So there's still hope because The Upside was part of that list of movies. So it's not lost, but there's definitely some movies that they don't know what to do with. They don't have enough funding to distribute because there's a lot of rebranding that goes, as you guys mentioned.
Right.
So yeah, it's crazy to think that there's so many movies that so many cast and crews have been paid, so much time, so much energy. There's finished product out there that just is not being seen to the public, which is very crazy.
It is.
Yeah, thank you for that.
Yeah, I appreciate your research on that. And to your point, it. You know, they're just awaiting a sale.
It's a waiting game.
You know, getting another distributor to pick it up. You know, Paddington 2 was caught in that crossfire and ended up being sold to Warner Brothers. But at the time, everything happened so fast that, you know, no disrespect, but Warner Brothers just released it. So there wasn't that much fanfare. As good as a movie as it is, it didn't do as well as it probably should have. Where with The Upside, when you look at the marketing strategy on this, they really did put together a good package for marketing. They had a good trailer. They had a decent poster, theatrical poster. They did a good job. Their television spots showcased the Cranston heart relationships.
I saw this trailer a lot.
Yeah.
And I think it does help when you have leading actors such as Bryan Cranston and Nicole Kidman that actually have weight to the film.
Yeah, and Kevin Hart right now is riding like a pretty decent
wave.
Where you know, he crosses over, whether he's in Jumanji or whether he's in a movie with The Rock or whether he's in Night School with Tiffany Haddish, and now you pair him with Bryan Cranston. That opens up a whole door. I know when I saw this movie, and again, it was a couple of weeks ago, I went on a Thursday preview night. It was more crowded than I thought it was going to be. And people generally, they seem to tend to really enjoy the movie.
Right. And this whole sorry, Marissa. Do you think this whole scandal with the Oscars is going to really be an issue when it comes to viewership with this movie because of the whole Kevin Hart issues?
No, it didn't seem to. I mean, it didn't seem to be because it was number one. It was number one at the box office, and that scandal, it didn't really seem to hinder. Look, if it were a more of a mainstream, like really catering to the African-American audience, like, look, he just had Night School, which did pretty well. So this wasn't Night School, and I think you got a really – not only did you get a crossover between, like, white African-American, but I think it skewed a little older. You weren't getting a younger audience to go see The Upside as much. So I think it did well.
Right, and also to for the Academy Awards, it's not going to get nominated for anything for Academy Awards.
Yeah, I mean,
it won't there are actually a lot of films that are still coming out that are getting like Academy Award recognition, but this one is certainly not within the echelon that is Academy Award.
Well, yeah, I think, well, correct me if I'm wrong, because maybe I could have just completely misinterpreted what you were going for, but you were going about the Kevin Hart controversy, being a host, the controversy about texts, but not being a host. I don't think that was going to
I was seeing trailers to this film before the Kevin Hart tweet scandals.
Absolutely.
So I don't think
definitely. But you know how people are kind of going hard at him? I'm wondering if you have any insight on whether or not this is going to affect people going to the movie theaters, because some people are very upset with him. I don't know if rightfully so or not. I don't know where anyone stands on the panel about this issue, but I mean, I think it's worth bringing up.
Yeah,
I mean, I've made my bones about how much I dislike Kevin Hart. Go watch our Pets review. Oh god, that was awful. It was painful, really. So like I personally don't like him as an actor, and I've clearly said it, but I am definitely open and willing to tell people go see The Upside, because he's actually fairly decent in this film.
Well, you know, since you brought it up, let's take a look at the grosses for this for Let's go there for a second. So it's opening weekend, going on just over 3,000 locations. It opened up at number one. Now, it was really interesting because going into this, everybody really was thinking that Aquaman was going to reclaim the top spot yet again. And I think it would have been like the third week or so, fourth week for Aquaman. Mm-hmm. And The Upside really wasn't tracking tremendously. So people, the prognosticators going into that week, or the release day week, which was January 11th. Mm-hmm. So going into January 11th, people were thinking Aquaman would most likely be number one. This movie is going to capture number two. And that's not how it panned out. And The Upside overtook Aquaman, albeit in its third or fourth week, but still, this is a smaller movie.
But to dethrone Aquaman, which is a DC film.
Sure. And well,
and it really doesn't have any other big film going against it. Maybe Glass.
Well, Glass, yeah. We'll see how The Upside fares in its second week.
Yeah.
But, you know, you are talking Warner Brothers. You're talking STX Entertainment, which is a much smaller, they're more of an independent type of a studio. They're smaller. They don't have the budgets of Warner Brothers, let's say. So for STX, it was kind of a big win to have a movie debut for them at number one, which you would think
the beginning of the year, no less.
At the beginning of the year, their big success for STX was Bad Moms, which didn't open to number one.
I love
but Bad Moms is a really good movie.
Yeah.
And since Bad Moms, though, STX has been trying to find another kind of a movie that audiences would embrace. And I think at least for this first week, they found it. It did $20 million on its opening weekend. People had it opening up between 15 and maybe 17. Domestically right now, we're looking at it's done $26 million, which isn't too shabby.
Yeah, like 26.6.
Yeah, it's not too shabby at all. Foreign, it's, you know, obviously they haven't 1.3. gone completely wide. Yeah, so 1.3. So you're looking at almost $28 million. Look, the budget is 37.5. I think given word of mouth, and I still think that January is a great time to have released this movie, because there really
nothing really big per se that's coming out to compete with.
You know, outside of like Glass, I forget what comes
most
out
most of the Academy
week.
Award movies are have now or have been out They're for out. A little bit.
And the movie The Upside is getting, you know, enough decent word of mouth that I don't think, you know, to be honest, I don't think the controversy is dinging it too much. It really wouldn't have been number one had audiences not embraced it and had not a good portion of Kevin Hart's fan base had gone to represent.
Yeah. I mean, listen, box office, $23.4
million. Yeah.
The budget of $37.5. I mean, it looks like they're going to be able to make profit off of that and take, you know. I'm looking at more numbers. 40% on Rotten Tomatoes, 5.3 out of 10 on IMDb, and 91% liked Google users.
Yeah, I was like, I think the main general audience is actually fairly enjoying it. Critics, per se, it's on the lower side, but the main general audience. And Cinema Score is an A.
Yeah, Cinema Score is an A, which is good. A 40% on Rotten Tomatoes is... it's okay.
Rotten.
Yeah, it's
but
not.
Aren't critics always harsher than the general public?
Yeah, for sure.
Well, so yeah, I mean, they can be. I mean, Rotten Tomatoes isn't saying that it's like miserable. If it was in the 20s or 30s, that would be miserable. Audiences like, there's definitely a schism there for sure. You know, I am definitely not in the A category for this movie, but regardless, it could have been a lot worse. And as I said, for STX being a distribution deal, meaning just quick distribution 101, that means STX was paid a fee to release the movie. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't have necessarily a stake in the movie. They were just given a fee to do it. So, like, if this movie continues to make money and a profit, STX, well, they already got their fee. Like, they're not going to get much richer off the movie other than what they were already paid. There may be a bonus if the movie reaches like $50 or $100 million,
which
but
I don't think
see
it will.
That's going to happen.
They're
here.
Lucky if it'll cross 40.
Yeah.
That's
but
being nice.
For STX, it is a big deal to be number one at the box office. So that's their big acclaim to fame for this. So that was a really good question. And I think, you know, we shall see, you know, we'll see what happens. And I think, so let's go back into the production a bit before we start wrapping up things, because I really think that this movie too, with its history, 2 years, the research that went into playing these roles, but also as part of a character,
the design,
the suite, this apartment suite in Manhattan.
Man, it was a gorgeous design.
Oh my god,
that bathroom is better than like any house I've ever lived in.
The bathroom is bigger than the house I live in. No. It's pretty cool, and it was kind of funny that scene in the shower. Right?
Yeah, but went a little too long.
I would love, like, a shower like that.
And why was it in German?
Well, he pressed German. It had, you know how, like, when you first start up your smartphone, it gives you the options of what language you want? He accidentally hit German.
I wonder if it was just, like, a German architect. Like, that kind of architect of a bathroom. I don't know.
That was an awesome bathroom. That shower
was
awesome.
It was a nice shower.
I would like never leave. No. But so this penthouse, right? There were two directions that they had, and we had Mark Friedberg, who's the production designer. So the first was in line with the script: a penthouse at a famously elite 740 Park Ave. The second pitch was for an extravagant Tribeca building. And at the end, the two decided on an apartment that would be at 740 Park, but decorated against traditional styles of the building instead of contemporary art and furniture. So this to me is crazy. They built it on a soundstage, 6,650 feet of interior space. Like, that's
wow.
That's like a full working
set. Building.
Yeah. That's like walking into every day going
to
work.
It's a whole penthouse size.
It's like, hey, I'm going to bed, guys. I'm going to take a nap.
I wonder how many production crew people like actually took naps on those beds. Probably everybody.
Probably. Yeah. Why wouldn't you? It was awesome. It was so nice. And even when it, like from the beautiful kitchen to when they had the party, to the artwork on the walls, which were actually real artists.
And also that's the thing. It never felt too big and it never felt too small. Like, every room served a certain purpose.
Yeah.
Like, one room had the first edition books. Another room was his actual bedroom. One was, you know, where Del was living. And one was the office. And it was like every room had, like, served a scene.
And it felt lived in and comfortable without being overly pretentious.
Right.
You know? I mean,
like, we've seen in films and television shows when, like, when we go into rich people's penthouses and whatnot, it feels too rich. Like, it's too lavish that no one could ever afford it or let alone breathe the air in it and step in it. But this one felt like there was personality to it.
And it was Philip's personality.
Right.
And Philip never, like, even if he had his faculties, Philip didn't seem to be a gentleman who was predicated by pretentiousness. He, you know, as rich as he was, he knows business and he can talk business and art and opera. But he seemed to be like, if he could talk to a gentleman like Dell and learn that, he's got a common ground with people. And the apartment, the way they designed it, seemed to mirror that personality aspect of Phil. I felt
absolutely
it was comfortable.
And really some, cool. And just the color scheme too. Some rooms were more sterile.
Sure.
Blue and gray, and with maybe a splash of red with the mobile. But others were like very warm and vibrant, like his library study room, you know. So, like, and it definitely served the different emotions that played in each scene.
Yeah. So, I really like that. I want to talk about the ending, because we talked about this, that to me the third act was a little bit sort of wonky. It seemed a little lazy. We talked about this time, and Juliet, I want you to chime in, because so we come to a point in the movie where they encourage Philip to date.
That was a bad date.
It was very uncomfortable, right? But I didn't expect the reaction that Philip gave to everybody else around. Like, everybody took shrapnel, but especially Del. So did they have a date in the original?
Fire.
He did.
Actually, in the original, it's a storyline that's actually rather important. He has a relationship with a woman already, but it's only epistolaire, which means it's only by written letter. So they write letters every week or so. So, and Del's the one who pushes him to meet this person and meet her in person. And there's a lot of funny jokes about it, because she is from, I think either the south part of France or whatever. And so they're kind of always teasing that the reason he hasn't met her is because she's probably like either crazy or not really pretty.
Right.
And there's actually, I don't want to spoil it too much, but he's pushing him to
meet her. Well, you can. Because, you know, the movie's been out. Well, that movie's been out for a while. This movie's been out for 2 weeks.
Okay.
So we are very spoiler rich. So don't worry.
Okay.
And we'll compare notes.
Yeah, we can. Yeah.
Okay, awesome. He pushes him to meet her, and they do have a rendezvous, and he kind of gets in his own head and he decides not to show up because he's very insecure with his whole wheelchair situation. He stands her up, but there is a somewhat happy ending. So the reason I don't want to spoil the meat tree is that I love this movie so much. I want people to see it. I think it's very funny, and I think, again, really a human story. I really recommend it.
Well, let's break down that date with us, because
the date actually happens.
Right. And the date, they were writing letters. Mm-hmm. It was extremely romantic. And in a letter, she had written her phone number. Mm-hmm. And Del was like, she wrote a phone number because she's tired of writing letters.
We're in the 21st century.
Call her. So up to that point, it seems to go like the original, except they do have the date, Marissa. Yeah. So,
Julianna Margulies, I mean, yeah. Another fantastic actress.
A surprise, by the
way. Also better than Kevin Hart. Won multiple Emmys. Yeah. Multiple. I can't even count how many Emmys she's won.
I was like, hey, so, look who it is.
So bring in another amazing actress with caliber. And, man, you can see the slow progression of that date. Slow, very painful progression of a train wreck of that what that date was. Because you can see, and also just added to the editing and the acting, where yeah. you can tell physically in just Julianna Margulies' performance that she was not okay with this situation. She knew, like, the audience knew that she was not a person that would have the patience to deal with Philip's situation. And you feel bad. Now, but that also doesn't make her a bad person either.
No, but in the way I took it, though, is, like, the date that happens in this movie, like, it started off really well. Like, there was a good rapport, and you figure that that came from the letter. There was an understanding. And she'd even said, and she was even helping with the food, wiping his mouth. You right. felt, wow, this is going really well, until there came a part where it started not to go on well. Mm-hmm. And boy, did it unravel very uncomfortably, if you're an audience member. If you were, like, you felt as if you were in the restaurant watching this go down, and it went down and flames and hot coffee, and
yes,
it was well, that character was never to be seen again, and
no, she literally had one scene.
Yep.
And it was a painful scene, I thought.
Yeah And then Philip gets into his own head. Mm-hmm. And he blames Del for forcing him to make the date and the call, and he fires him.
Yep.
And this is leading to our end. But I felt...
End of second act.
Jeez. I was like, wow, that was harsh. Like, it really wasn't. Like, come on, man. Like, you can't blame him.
It was misplaced anger.
Right.
Misplaced frustration.
And you did send him away. You could have said, now, you know what? It's probably best if he stays.
Mm-hmm.
It was misplaced anger. And you felt the regret after the firing, and you're like, okay, what's going to happen now? Now we come to the third act and our passage of time that is ticked off by a beard.
So not clearly.
No.
I mean, because at the beginning of the film, literally said 6 months earlier.
Right.
They gave us a clear time
yes.
table limitation. And then this one, now you're trying to figure out, is it another 6 months later? Who knows?
Right. And you're trying to figure out, you learn that Dell opened up a wheelchair, an electronic business. Wheelchair business, mm-hmm. like where he builds these things for hospitals because he has a bit of experience. Philip grows a beard. And
Yvonne also left.
Yvonne leaves. So in order to start a business, oh, and Dell also puts his family into a house.
Into another house,
so
yeah.
He must have been making a ton of money, because to open a business, to get a house, you know, he had all this seed money. He must have done
nice
really well, a decent house, right? So that's a long path. I was like going, but the movie made it seem like months, when it probably should have been like, at the very least, a year and a half.
Right.
You know?
It was a long beard.
It was,
which is also, you know, it is funny, and it is a callback to a really long joke that they had, and like, because Philip was so against beards.
Right.
And then he, ironically, grows a beard.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the physical, it was the physical therapist who seeked out Dell. Mm-hmm. And says, listen.
She played a great role.
She was good. Yeah. She was really good, too. I like that actress. Can't think of her name right now, please. No disrespect, but she was very good.
Yeah.
And then Dell goes back and, you know, we fix everything up. Everything ends up, with, you know, nicely tied up in a bow, because even Nicole Kidman, Yvonne, comes back. Mm-hmm. They realize that they actually, Phil and Yvonne, realize they're meant for each other. And yet, since the whole movie, it was partly predicated on finding that idea. We obviously know that Dell found the idea to do the wheelchairs, but mm-hmm. you would have thought that would have come up in conversation. Like, Like Philip.
Hey, I know how to build things.
Get what I did.
Right.
You know, and I thought, like, that further bonds the relationship, because I would assume that that character would go, Del, that's an amazing idea. And you did it all on your own, man.
Like, right, like, he can build actual equipment. Because sure. When he walked into his Philip's bedroom for the first time and pointed out the mobile and all that, like, he has an eye for yeah. technology and yeah. actually building.
Yeah, and but I just wished it. I wish that fruition was recognized by Philip. Like the way the movie ends, Philip doesn't necessarily know what Del's been up to these few weeks.
Yeah,
I'm kidding, few weeks, but you know what I'm saying. I thought that would have enhanced and maybe made the relationship stronger. And as we learn, the relationship did go on well after the events that take place in the movie, that they right. remain friends.
The third act was quicker sort of than the first and second. Like, the yeah. third act was really wrapped up in about 15 minutes.
Yeah, if and you I think about it. I think you said it best at the top of the show. It lost momentum.
It lost momentum.
Yep, it really did.
It kind of just quickly wrapped.
Yep, and it made the movie meh.
Like, at the end, yeah. like, you don't want to leave on a film where, like, it was going so strong and then just kind of tapers off.
Yeah. I felt I wanted – it missed out on that great crowd-pleasing, tear-like, very, like, happy, emotional ending that other movies like An Instant Family or The Green Book had. I had hoped that some of that would be here, and it never reached those heights. It never – peaked. It almost peaked paragliding. Too soon.
And I think that was just like just the peak of and the climax of their characters is that Del finally gets Philip back to quote unquote his old ways, right. enjoying life again, paragliding, because that was the accident that caused him sure. to be quadriplegic. So, like, really coming full circle just in character development wise.
Right.
It hit that, but it didn't hit emotionally.
Nay, nay. No, I agree. And let's talk about the paragliding scene, because that was a scene that's showcased in the trailer,
yeah.
And I was like, all through the movie, when is this coming up? Right. Like, did they chop it out? Because it literally shows up right. at the end of the movie.
When we got to the scene, I was like, oh yeah, I did see this in the trailer.
Right.
That's right. So. I had a conscious moment. I was like, oh yeah, here it is.
Yeah. Well, now that we've talked about the end of this movie, the middle, and the beginning, and we've talked about the original, I think it's time for us to wrap up.
Yeah.
I mean, how much more
upside? We're going to glide out of here.
Yeah, we're going to glide up here. Maybe. We're going to leave on an upside. So, your final thoughts on the movie?
Overall, enjoyable. I say people should go watch it, or also watch Untouchables.
You got it, Marissa.
Yeah, I messed that up. Watch that first or watch it second. And, like, I don't know, watch it both, because I'm very... This movie did a good enough job for me to be curious about the original.
Sure.
And the original story. And now I want to watch the first version.
And I encourage people to watch the original, read the book, read books too. Reading books is important, as also as important as seeing movies. But mm-hmm. if you see the original, go get yourself a little culture other than the yogurt that you're eating right now. So I say do that. Go see this version. You won't hate it. You might even probably like it more than, say, me. And that's okay. But you'll have a good time. And that's, you know, there we go. I think we've talked to Juliet. What are your parting words? Did we encourage you to maybe check out the U.S. version?
Yeah, I think I will. I think you guys did a good job. I'm curious now. So I'm going to go watch it. And you know what? You can't make up your mind until you see something.
This is true.
I definitely need to go see it for myself. I have one last question for you
yes.
guys. Just because I was looking at some numbers here. The French version had a budget of $10.8 million and then grossed at the box office $412.9 million.
Yeah.
That's pretty big, if you ask me. Are we thinking the same thing for the American
not
version?
Even
heck
close.
No.
No. And
they're lucky if they cross 40.
And I think part of the reason for choosing to remake that movie is because of its international appeal. It was, I believe, France's highest grossing movie. This movie... Look, because I think of its turmoil, everything that it took to get it up on screen, that definitely is going to hurt it. When you release a movie like this in January, it's more – January is like a dumping grounds because the holidays are over. It can't compete with bigger movies. STX wasn't going to can't afford to throw the money into to market the movie properly. I think it was released at the perfect time, right out of the holidays. It's still crowd
pleasing.
Families
can enjoy this.
Sure.
Yeah.
And it's not offensive. I mean, it's just very, yeah. This is a very vanilla movie that shouldn't offend anybody. And people will walk out going, yeah, it was good.
Right. You can bring teenagers to this film. Maybe not kids. There was a kid sitting next to me. I was like, dude, you are too young to be watching this film.
Yeah. I just think that it's not even going to come close to those grosses. But as I said earlier, I think STX is thumping their chest. They had a number one picture. So, you know, they continue to have a slate for the rest of the year. I think the upside will do really well in home entertainment and streaming and digital. So it'll have a life, but not
as
the
nearly
life
well as
that it had. No. So good question, though, and good research on that. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. I don't think this was.
And also, this one doesn't feel original.
No, it doesn't.
The French one did. I'd imagine when the French one came out in 2011, that's a whole nother generation ago.
Sure.
So when that came out, that felt original.
Yeah.
Even from then, there was another movie that this reminded me of, You're Not You.
Right.
Which is Hilary Swank and Emmy Rossum.
Sure.
Another story about a paraplegic, but only because she was suffering from ALS. But it's a relationship story of two unlikely pairing.
Yeah.
You know, dealing with this life situation.
Yeah.
So it's not original.
No.
And I think that's why a lot of people might not go see it.
Yeah. And it being in January, I think the movie has peaked, but I think it'll stick around because people are enjoying it with an A on CinemaScore.
Yeah.
So there you have it. Hey, stay tuned for more Anatomy of a Movie. A movie that nobody's talking about opened up this weekend called this little movie called Glass. Which is a sequel to a trilogy. We'll be doing that. We have Academy Award nominated pictures. We actually have the nominations are coming out the next Tuesday.
Yeah.
So we've got plenty of award nominations, nominated movies to discuss prior to the awards.
We have Vice, the favorite, If Beale Street Could Talk. So we do have some more Academy movies to catch up on because we are just coming out of the holidays.
Yeah, and then we go into February.
Yeah.
I mean, we're already...
We're there.
We're ending January already. It's the first time I've seen you.
I know. So, crazy.
Well, in any case, folks, please, thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning us in. If you like this show, we've got a whole library of show. We are your movie-going companion. So check us out. If a movie's on Blu-ray and streaming 9 out of 10 times, we've done a show for it. Check us out. Watch the movie. Watch Anatomy of a Movie. Tell us what you think. We love to hear your comments. Marissa, where can people find you?
Everyone can follow me at SerafiniTV.
And I'm on the Twitters at DMovies1701. We look forward to seeing you next week. Have a great time at the movies, folks. Bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of its owners or principals.